How's it going, everybody? Thank you again for tuning in. And do me a favor, make sure that you subscribe to the show on whatever platform it is that you listen. Tell your friends to subscribe and leave a little review. Let me know where you're listening from. Tell me what you think of the episodes. I told you guys that I was back from Thanksgiving and kind of in supercharge mode. I have another episode I'm bringing you. I've got a couple more that I just finished up and I'll be dropping over the next few days. So stay tuned. But this episode is with someone who I've really been kind of chasing to have a conversation with for almost, 2 years now. And I initially reached out to him about coming on the Bud Brothers podcast that I did prior to this. And we just never were able to make it work. But I was able to get his attention recently. We had a conversation and it just made sense for him to come on and talk about what he's up to. He's a cannabis advocate as well as a mixed martial arts fighter. He's a former UFC fighter. He recently fought again outside of the UFC, and he actually is now in the process of launching his own promotion where he'll also be the main event of the show. So really enjoyed the conversation. He is the first mixed martial artist to receive a therapeutic use exemption for medical marijuana. And I talked to him about that process, what it was like, some of the stigma that's come along with being a cannabis advocate in the athletic world. And yeah, we just kind of talked about all kinds of stuff. He's really fun. He's from Canada. And his name is Elias Theodoro. Enjoy the episode. But before we enjoy the episode, a really quick shout out from our sponsor, Action Specialty Coffee and Natural Supplements. Look, I've said it 1,000 times. Well, actually, I've said it 35 times, as this is episode 35, and Action has sponsored every episode to this point. If you have not tried Action Coffee, you need to go to drinkaction.com. That's Action with a K. You need to use code word curious. You'll get 15% off your order. And possibly sign up for the subscription, because if you buy one bag and try it, I can assure you that you'll be going back to the website and ordering more. 20% off if you sign up for subscriptions. And if you're not a coffee drinker, check out some of the natural supplements. Turmeric and hemp, MCT bombs. You know, Action is on a mission to provide everybody with the functional fuels that they need to live their lives. I was not a coffee drinker. I was an energy drinker. I still indulge every once in a while, but coffee has been a game changer for me. And the cold brews that we have as well, also a game changer. They're not online yet. They're going to be in some select retail locations around Austin. So if you're in Austin and you're listening to this, make sure you stay tuned. We'll be sharing more about that. Make sure you go to drinkaction.com, use code word curious, and enjoy the episode. Well, man, Elias, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here and spend a little time with me. I know we've traded messages for a while. I think I reached out to you a couple years ago initially because of my presence in the cannabis space. So was doing some things, still do a little bit with my younger brothers in that realm, but knew that you were somebody who was a really strong advocate for cannabis. I've always been a fan of mixed martial arts. And so those two worlds kind of coming together and knowing that, I think the difference for me is I knew there was a lot of guys that used for both pleasure as well as for therapeutic use. But most just decided to take the easy road and, you know, cover it up or just get creative with how they used. And you didn't seem like you were the kind of guy that was willing to do that. And you put your neck out on the line, and I'm sure took more shit than anybody could possibly imagine. But I always respected that. So I stayed persistent, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on here and share a little bit of that with everybody. Cause I know I've had people ask me a lot, like, hey, there's a guy who fights and he's up in Canada and he's a big cannabis advocate. You need to have him on the show. So you're fulfilling that for me, and I appreciate it a ton.
Oh, my pleasure. And obviously, together we grow, and really excited to jump on.
Yeah. So, you know, for those that don't know, you've actually 20 fight career. So you've been around for quite a while. Your early days in Ultimate Fighter television show up in Canada, correct?
Yeah. I was the first Canadian to win the Ultimate Fighter. That was the Ultimate Fighter. I can't remember. There's been so many at this point. But first one to win in Canada, had 11 fights in the UFC. And I have 20 or so fights at this point.
Yeah. So were you early on in your career, was cannabis something that you were using in your career, or were you somebody that kind of steered away from it, or outside of competition indulged, or how was that relationship early on for you?
Yeah, no, I'd say I very much kind of steered away from it. I had a negative, connotation in my mind. I thought that cannabis and athletics, you know, they didn't mix. And, part of that kind of, as with everyone, changes when you get to know someone that uses something or is someone that is kind of, has a stigma around it, and it kind of opens your eyes. And that person was my coach at the time, who was at the time a patient for the better part of 10 years already at that point. And I very much saw the need to use cannabis instead of first line medicines in his case. And that was most evident whenever we traveled. Part of the whole fighter's journey was, going to different places around the world, whether it was Thailand, Brazil, et cetera, Japan, whatever it ends up being. And it was during those, longer stretch periods that we were overseas, and where his medicine wasn't considered legal there, and his need to switch to first line medicines, painkillers, opioids, and what that did to his body, the side effects, not properly medicated in the way that cannabis does. And that opened up my eyes very much so about cannabis as an alternative to what, has been considered medicine in, pain management more specifically, over the years. And it'll fast track a few years later, where my condition of bilateral neuropathy, which is essentially nerve damage of the upper extremities, started to, be more persistent in my, daily life as both patient and athlete. I actually talked to my doctor right around when the UFC was, the UFC at the time was partnering with USADA, which is the United States Anti-Doping Agency, and cannabis was deemed a prohibited substance because of it. And, at the time, it was kind of looked at just as bad, if not worse, in some cases, than, actual performance enhancers. Like, whether it's in USADA itself or, other, governing bodies in mixed martial arts and, sports in general, cheaters of actual cheaters using, steroids or performance enhancing would get less time. So I talked to my doctor, I talked to my, coach at the time, around 2016 or so, when when USADA partnered with UFC. That's when I started my own pursuit of what's called a therapeutic use exemption, which, again, it basically getting the approval of banned substances approved on therapeutic terms.
Now, through that process, when USADA started to come on board and it seemed like they were going to ratchet up testing for all sorts of different things, did anybody from the organization pull you aside and say, hey, look, like, this is the way this is going to be? You got to, I try to envision like what those conversations would be like in my head, especially when it's something like cannabis, where it's not like you're cheating, right? You're taking something. It's not like you're going to somebody who's all juiced up and you're like, hey man, FYI, we're going to start like testing. You might want to stop cheating. But somebody like you, I would hope that maybe somebody would come and say, hey Elias, like, listen, this is a slippery slope. We understand cannabis you know, is beneficial for you, but this is changing, and or was it not a word, and it's just like you're kind of dealing with these restrictions now, and good luck.
A little bit of both. My coach and I talked to Jeff Nowinski, and he, you know, has been very vocal in his stance of cannabis not being a performance enhancer, rather has therapeutic, you know, properties to it. So, and again, my coach, being a very smart individual, he basically brought up some points in regards to, again, because of Canada's stance on medical cannabis being recognized for the better part of like 20 years now, nearly at this point. And because we have healthcare and because we have healthcare rights, there's basically loopholes to get into the US through Canada. So he very much kind of smiled at our very, you know, what's it called, workaround way to do it. Sure. To eventually get cannabis recognized as a potentially as a medicine in the U.S. But it was just part of the policy, right? So it was one of those things where they said that, you know, the way that they're testing, it shouldn't be an issue if you're stopping, you know, X amount of days. But that's obviously not the case. You know, you don't have to look too far from today, where again, fighters are being flagged and they're basically being deemed cheaters, and it's actually the same type of person. So they use the same flat test for every athlete, and what that does is essentially you know, it persecutes certain types of body types. For instance, females, the way the standard test goes, because just generically speaking, they have more water and potentially fat ratio than men. So it's tested through your fat, and that would have it stay in their body for a lot longer. So too on the heavier weights. So like, that's why you see most of the people that get flagged are like 185 or heavyweights. Mm-hmm. An example would be also to kind of bring to the light, where a friend of mine, he got suspended on his championship bout. He won it, but it was overturned because of the cannabis, because it's considered a prohibited substance. This wasn't in UFC, it was another one, one of the what's it called, if you will, regionals that kind of feed into the UFC. And they have different thresholds. So the UFC looks at 150 nanograms, where this other organization does 125. So he had 150, which would have been, you know, just on the threshold with the UFC. But because this one had a lower stance, he was suspended, I think, for 6 to 9 months. Then that was only because he took responsibility for it. It would have been like a year, maybe like 15 months for cannabis. He lost half of his purse and he was fined and then suspended for X amount of months, like I said. And then because he was coming back, he on a loss, essentially, his record didn't kind of allow his contract to move forward like it would have if it counted the win. And it kind of derailed like his plans and his directions. And again, his comeback fight, you know, not necessarily linked to that, but, you know, he didn't win his comeback fight. And again, it was just more hurdles and, you know, trials and tribulations that really shouldn't have happened, because cannabis is a medicine. And unfortunately, because of the, you know, outdated mindset and outdated policies of, you know, sports in general, cannabis is classified a Schedule I drug in the U.S., and it means that there's no medical property to it. Obviously, things like the UN, who have just, you know, removed cannabis of its, you know, previous you know, kind of placement in regards to drugs, and also the, you know, places like Canada that have looked at cannabis as medicine for many, many years. Obviously, things are starting to change in the U.S. as well, but it's kind of like a, you know, an ongoing battle of pushing and fighting for cannabis to be recognized as medicine.
Yeah, and I would think too, right, like having to be below a certain threshold is great, but if you're truly taking cannabis as a means of medicine and you need that for your health leading up to a fight, especially when you're cutting weight, stressed out, those are in some cases probably when you would need it the most. And so it's contradictory that, you know, like that's when we're going to have to be only because we're testing it in the same vein that we would test other substances, which like, okay, yeah, you let's stop taking a high amount of testosterone a couple weeks before the fight so that if we get tested near the fight, then it's kind of drawn down. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's poor. To me, it's not looking at it with the respect that it needs to as its own individual circumstance. But
no, were you 100 correct? Yeah. That's 100 correct, and even more so, kind of bringing back to the example that I had with my friend, his, because again, he was large, he's a heavyweight, he's a big dude. He did his own private testing, and it basically stayed in the system for like 80 days. It's part of the fact that the half-life in regards to the standard testing that they have is kind of you know, a hit or miss for every single person, because every body is different and everybody is different. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the same reason why females get flagged a lot more, you know, kind of ratio wise in regards to how many athletes there are versus how many times they get flagged. And in addition, again, the standard, one standard of test doesn't fit all. And that was part of what I actually argued with my own therapeutic use exemption, both with USADA and then with the British Columbia Commission. I argued that, again, one, it's medicine, and two, the standard of test is kind of flawed because of it. And again, one just has to look at the fact that you can crush a handful of perks and it wouldn't be an issue, but you know, a joint or a vape that you use, even for medical purposes, weeks ago, can come back and, you know, really harm your career.
Yeah. I know Mike Tyson just came out and said, I saw in an interview that he said that he was high. He smoked up prior to fighting Roy Jones Jr. the other day. And so, you know, I thought about it and I saw people's opinions either direction. And I'm just like, that's a personal choice. I don't see where there's an advantage to him. And maybe for his own personal mindset, it puts him in a good place, but it's not creating a physical advantage where he's stronger or faster. He's really more in his own self and then maybe able to access things that he's already naturally created. But I don't know. I had a hard time understanding where that would be a problem. Why it would matter at all. Like, you either are for it or against it. It shouldn't matter if he wants to take a hit beforehand. I mean, have you ever smoked prior to a fight?
I think there's a bunch of different caveats. One, it was an exhibition bout, so it's not even really a fight. Two, what do you call it? They removed cannabis from testing, which an organization is allowed to do. More specifically, they were tested by VADA. VADA doesn't test for cannabis. Three, I think there's a classification difference between someone that uses the cannabis all the way leading up to it. And part of my argument is to look at it as any other substance. So the only thing that could potentially happen is if you smoke just before. Obviously, cannabis has a euphoria. Cannabis has a quote-unquote impairment. So I don't condone any athlete competing impaired, whether that's with a handful of perks or, you know, what's it called, a big blunt beforehand. I personally medicate with cannabis through a vaporizer, because if I'm both going to be an athlete and advocate, I try to, promote my use as an athlete and a patient in the healthiest way possible. So, you know, removing combustion, removing the paper that kind of goes with it would go more hand in hand. There's obviously eating it. You know, honestly, it's a personal choice, I would imagine. But me looking at it, I wouldn't suggest anyone, you know, doing a couple of shots or doing a couple of a big blunt beforehand. My argument is more in regards to pain management leading up to a fight. And I don't actually medicate day of, for the most part, because I want to be as, you know, focused. What I am asking for is to be able to medicate with cannabis leading all the way up to a fight. Mm-hmm. So that's the battle that shouldn't be an issue. Again, getting into the fact of cannabis use and actual, you know, THC levels, et cetera, et cetera. That's a wholly different thing. And that's not my job. That's the commission. And that's the, you know, the officials that are there. They're supposed to deem whether I can compete in a competition. So those are the kind of caveats I would bring up to it.
No, that's a good point. So now you started that process in, you said 2016?
Yeah, just before 2016, the UFC partnered with them, or announced their partnership with them at the end of 2015. And again, it was actually a really proud moment for me in regards to the UFC, them bringing on an anti-doping agency and a third-party anti-doping agency, more specifically, that, you know, was a part of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, because I believe in clean sport. I don't condone cheating. I'm a clean athlete, and I would argue that cannabis should not be looked at the same as a performance-enhancing drug, because it isn't. It doesn't alter your actual DNA in any way, shape, or form, like something like a true steroid, a true EPO would. It's actually a very non-scientific, labeling for that. The reason why there's nothing performance-enhancing, any more than kale is, any more than supplements are, any more than anything that you're adding to supplement what your body cannot do. For me, it is pain management. And, other medicines like, opioids, painkillers, even to the point where, again, in the process of getting my therapeutic use exemption through USADA, they want you to exhaust all other medicines because, yes, they recognize there could be medical properties with cannabis, but they want you to try everything under the sun just to prove that that doesn't work, which is backwards. To the point where I was with my family doctor who's helped me through this whole process, and he's scratching his head saying, we don't suggest these medicines anymore. This is from like the 90s and 80s. And that's one of the issues with being with the third party tester that's part of a bureaucracy now at this point, right? With the World Anti-Doping Agency, they've been around since the 90s. And they were literally trying to make me go through, 6 to 9 week cycles of antidepressants just so I can numb everything else and kind of say, oh, look, as a side effect, it numbed your pain because it numbed everything. It's a ridiculous way to kind of treat high performance athletes. It's actually counterintuitive and would force people to go the route of, these antidepressants, these painkillers, and which are highly addictive, and obviously the offshoot of it in regards to potential of, if an athlete's career doesn't go well and they can't necessarily afford it because of their actual, career is sidelined because of their potential addiction, then they're going on the street version of it. Then, we have the opioid crisis. You have, the fentanyl, the different offshoots that this process could potentially be creating, former athletes into potential future addicts. And that's part of what I'm trying to fight, not only for myself, but all other athletes, as I look to create precedent as the first cannabis athlete.
Yeah, no, it's somewhat, I hate to use the word hypocritical, but it is kind of hypocritical because I think you and I would both, and I don't want to speak for you, but if you were to ask me, there's some truth when somebody says, hey, look, we're doing this for the health of the athletes. We don't want people taking substances that they shouldn't be taking across the board. It's not, we're in there. You have people punching each other and kicking each other in the head. You don't want somebody on some crazy amount of hormones that could put somebody like yourself at risk. So I believe that when they say that they're doing it for the health of the athletes, but then I think you're talking out of the complete other side of your mouth when somebody comes in and is trying to get a therapeutic use exemption for cannabis. And part of that process is, hey, try all these other things that are going to be detrimental to your health. And our justification is because we want healthy athletes. We want to promote the good health and practice of that. So, whether it's political, I'm sure everything impacts it, right? And I was going to ask, through that 4 years, how much of that from your perspective was 4 years because of the political pressures that are placed along the process? Or is it just simply it's something new and because you were the first guy, it took a little bit of extra time?
It's both. For specifically for the United States Anti-Doping Agency, the United States part is the problem. They look at cannabis as a Schedule I drug. So does the U.S. government. The U.S. government funds them. They don't allow anyone to deter it from the track that they already have, especially a Canadian kind of jumping in the ship. More specifically with WADA, the two organizations that kind of kiboshed it, because the Canadian organization actually, and they have like every 4 years, every 2 years, whatever it ends up being, they have like a great meeting where everyone can kind of, all the shareholders and WADA can kind of give their 2 cents and kind of say what we should do next. And then, you know, they all vote on it. They suggested cannabis being removed as a prohibited substance. Japan and the U.S. kiboshed that. So it's basically those two countries with the biggest amount of power and one of the biggest, you know, especially in the Western world, biggest, you know, negative connotation. So it was always a uphill battle because of the classification that being a U.S. company with a U.S. anti-doping agency, they had a very U.S. policy on it. And then fast track with no longer being with the U.S., organization, the UFC, I was able as a free agent to apply for a therapeutic use exemption through British Columbia, and they approved it based on my three arguments. One, the British Columbia Charter of Rights and Freedom. Two, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom. And three, you know, the standard of testing, like I mentioned. So, and I think, again, kind of putting it all together in regards to cannabis and medical rights that Canadians are afforded to as our fundamental right. The real caveat to that is now all of North America actually work together in the commissions. This opens the door not only for Canada, but different locations in the U.S. That have medical rights in regards to cannabis. There are opportunities to now, what's it called, apply in those jurisdictions and actually get the same result, because the commissions all work in congruency with each other. Because, for instance, if I was getting suspended in New York for steroids and I was suspended for a year and I tried to apply for California, they would say, no, you're suspended, because you have to disclose that. You would say, no, you're suspended, and we're not going to give you a license until your suspension is up. So too on the positive ruling. So I've already at this point have started the process in regards to applying for different jurisdictions that have medical cannabis, and I'm looking to compete there. And, you know, ironically enough, being a free agent, I'm able to be an agent of change for medical cannabis rights. And That's what I'm going to do in Canada. That's what I'm going to do in the U.S. And who knows, that's what I'm going to do around the world.
That's awesome. I was curious how that would all translate, because I know that you're a free agent. Any news on that front? What's the future for your fight career right now?
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to be both fighter and promoter for my own organization and what's it called, events called Rise Fighting the Stigma. I'm partnering with a Canadian organization, and it'll be streamed on Imagine BC. The light behind me is a little changed, but that's the logo right there. But it's an app. It's a revolutionary app that is both it is you know, beneficial for both the viewer and the content creator. So I'm going to be creating actually my own organization, my own event that kind of documents when I validate my therapeutic use exemption and actually set precedent for both myself and boxers and MMA fighters, amateur and professional in British Columbia, because then now moving forward, they can apply for the same therapeutic use exemption and they probably won't have the same hurdles in regards to the process. They'll just be able to use their doctor's prescription and, you know, what's called validation of their need for cannabis. And again, opening that door for other athletes moving forward. The event itself is going to be 19 plus, which actually allows for 19 plus in Canada and 21 plus in the US. And it'll actually allow the many different cannabis partners to actually promote, because that's one of the very big parts in regards to Canada. And also the U.S. as well. It's age gated, so it actually allows a adult friendly place to have an adult event.
That's awesome. Are you familiar with the High Rollers?
Hell yeah. Yeah. I got on High Roller's team.
Okay, yeah, right on. So Lonnie and I are, I met Big Lon a few years back, actually had him on, my brother and I had that podcast, it was called The Bud Brothers. And so we were like specifically in the cannabis space, we did a podcast with Lonnie talking about jujitsu and kind of him really infusing cannabis into that community and some of the pushback that he got. But I, it always something that was exciting, and he's here, I'm in Pittsburgh with him. So
nice.
We see a little bit of each other, and I'm actually hoping to have him on here to talk about some stuff they have planned for 2021. I'd love to connect you too. I don't know if you know, Anthony Johnson or not, but Rumble is a big cannabis advocate. And, I do a little bit of work with him. We're partners in some things. So I know he's doing a lot right now, with some consulting companies that he's involved with. And I know he's in the process of coming back out. He's, I don't know what I'm allowed to say.
2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2021. So, there's been hints of it.
Yeah.
What's it called? Going back to our actual conversation about cannabis, I think the like certain sports, like you mentioned in regards to jiu-jitsu, I think it'd be a different context in regards to cannabis use, etc. I'm thinking more specifically in regards to punches. I'm thinking more in regards to kicking and all that jazz. Jiu-jitsu, I can understand the concept of flow state. And again, two consenting adults, that is the actual construct of the competition. I think that's, the exception to the rule.
Yeah, no, makes a lot of sense. No, man, it's a shame that it's taken all this work, but it's really cool to see somebody like yourself really put your neck out there and take a stand for something like this. So
thank you so much.
Yeah. So you're actually going to have events like promoting full on MMA events and everything like that? Or is it going to be a combination of kickboxing and other stuff, or what's?
We're kind of getting the plans all, obviously COVID slows everything down. So we were actually instrumental in regards to bringing the protocols, and we'll be the first, one of the first, MMA events or sporting events in general, in Canada, other than, the NHL. And obviously, that's an institution that can have that direct line in regards to the powers that be to kind of allow that to happen again. So really excited to help bring back mixed martial arts in Canada. And the event itself, like you mentioned, I will be both the promoter and the fighter. I'll be the main event for that event, and I'll be working with a partner, Saba, who's part of Rise, which is an existing organization out there. So we're co-promoting each other and helping out in regards to that process. And like I mentioned, it's going to be on a revolutionary app, Imagine BC, which is built off of blockchain. So the really interesting thing with them is right now, because of the very large social media platforms right now, one, they steal your data. And that's not something that Imagine BC does. And two, they actually have a very cannabis friendly, stance. So there is going to be a whole educational giveaways and everything under the sun, and just content in general that I'll be creating on the Imagine BC app. And this event is one of those. It'll be 420 naturally, and you'll get both the event itself, and then obviously a month of my subscription, because it's a subscription and donation based platform. So it allows members to get your monthly content, but also very personalized content as well. So I'm really excited to partner with Imagine BC on my fight and much more moving forward in 2021.
Well, that's really cool, man. I had no idea. I'm going to be doing a little bit of research after we get off this to see what's going on. That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Anything that has to do with blockchain, for me, whether it's from a financial standpoint, social media, to your point, decoupling away from the big machine, I don't think is a bad thing, and especially when you can do it in a way that still gives people the things that they want. Because I think I was just having a conversation, a podcast earlier this morning with somebody, and it was people are really afraid to not have these things that we crave in our lives. We've mm-hmm. kind of come to this world where it's like we'll complain about stuff all day long, and yet we then pick up a phone and we perpetuate all that fear by just engaging in it, right? So to have an option where we still get to consume the things that we love, but that we're creative and thinking about ways to do it that doesn't feed the problem at the same time, I think is really important. So you ever think about running for office? I mean, geez, man, you should.
Well, I'm obviously I got a lot on my plate already. And I very much want, I'm in that, you know, that doing component in one part of my career. And that's what I plan on doing. And I'm very much a professional fighter. I have many years left in me. I'm 32, but, you know, the way that my career is kind of growing, I got another like 5 years left in me. And I love every single day of it, both waking up to go train and the fighting component. And I can't wait to get back into the cage, you know, and get back to my winning ways. I'm back on a winning streak in regards to my last fight against a very tough opponent, a former UFC fighter, Hernani Perpetuative. I might have butchered his last name, but point being, I'll probably end up fighting another former UFC fighter in my next fight, and then kind of take it from there. I'm really excited to see the landscape of mixed martial arts and how it is, and where my career and my journey moves forward.
Yeah, no, it's in a great place. And as huge as the UFC is right now, I think as many other organizations that are possible, especially when things that are on the table right now, like fighter pay, I think having this outside influence and giving fighters an opportunity to showcase their skills, there's enough people who have skills these days to fill up all these promotions way more than, I mean, even if you turned on a UFC event 10 years ago, there was a line in the card where you were like, okay, I don't have to tune in really after this if I want to see something great. You can turn on regional events all the time and catch talent that is far eclipsed. And that's just a testament to how much the sport has grown. But that's awesome. Any hints on who that person will be? You have any ideas, or are you still in negotiation to try to find someone?
So the negotiation, what's called in part of that process, and just can't talk about it until it's a final.
No, no worries. We'll be tuning in for sure. I did want to ask you, as somebody who's an advocate of cannabis, you know, with psychedelics, I hear and talk to a lot of people who microdose from a psilocybin perspective. Is that anything you've ever dove into at all as far as those types of compounds, or even put thought into how that plays into all of this as well?
Oh, no, for sure. There's already different places in the world that have, you know, embraced the power of psychedelics, more specifically in regards to, you know, psilocybin. You know, I think Vancouver has certain types of trials that are going on in regards to PTSD. Mm. And that's the next movement in regards to legalization. And, you know, especially for the medical components that I think we haven't, you know, tapped into. To their potential, both in obviously cannabis, you know, missing decades of potential research, and also psilocybin. Me personally, I definitely haven't used psilocybin enough to, you know, what's it called, on a regular enough basis in regards to the microdosing. But you know, there's so many different companies now that I've been able to, you know, sample some products and whatnot, and you know, I think every body is different. And for me, cannabis is what I kind of harness in regards to as a plant and its properties and what it does for me more specifically. But I've, you know, a huge believer in the power of psychedelics as well, both, you know, in the aspect of, you know, kind of, I wouldn't necessarily even, yeah, kind of in the same vein of like medicinal, the concept of medicinal, like, you know, breaking down that ego, breaking down, you know, those barriers in regards to communication with yourself and others. And obviously, psilocybin and other forms of psychedelics are very powerful in regards to kind of destroying and dismantling the ego, and also breaking through those barriers, as mentioned, in communication.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because a lot of people wouldn't look at something like that as medical, right? But everybody is quick to criticize somebody who has an ego. But if that person wanted to find a way to try to like lessen that ego, and it was through using psychedelics, even if it's a proven way to do so, there's that stigma tied to it. Whether, you know, it's just, It's the battle that you fought on a different front, but I always find it interesting that there's a mindset around it, but it's like it's solving the problem that a lot of people would then ultimately complain about. It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. It took so many years for cannabis, but I think that's going to accelerate with psilocybin. There's already public companies trading for psilocybin. So that once money gets involved, things kind of, especially legit money, if you will, things kind of just start moving. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting because at the end of the day, we're just bags of chemicals, and there's certain chemicals done in a safe and controlled way are much more, beneficial than the, you know, kind of doing it in the shadows of a quote unquote black market.
Yep. No, that's the truth, man. And it's an interesting way to say it. I haven't heard that before, but we're just a bag of chemicals.
And everybody needs different compounds to kind of complete themselves. And why not do that in a safe and, you know, safe and observed way, whether it's your doctor, your medicine man, or, you know, some type of a legit way, and you know, having it done as legit as possible, you know, through the channels in regards to, you know, mass production, not necessarily even mass production, because obviously, you know, micro growers, craft growers, like those are very important components. I just mean more in the, not mass scale in regards to the necessarily the corporation wise and, you know, centralized one. I mean, mass scale in regards to everyone's doing it. More so in a, highly regulated, avenue.
So I have my suspicions on this, but you've been fighting for what now, 10, 20 years,
15 9 years. 9 years.
9 years. So 10 years. Okay. What do you think the rough percentage of athletes who moderately use cannabis leading up to, let's just even say up to like a week before the fight, 50%, 60%? I mean, I know.
I don't know how to quantify that
it's
number,
more than the percentage that have come out and filed for therapeutic use exemptions. Though,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and that's,
I think that actually has to do with a lot of, the California, culture and that mixing with, again, we talked about high rollers, but, jiu-jitsu, and kind of those cultures kind of co-mingling and kind of what's it called, becoming one and the same. I think that has very much, you know, reverberated through all the other different pockets of mixed martial arts and different, you know, teams and whatnot. So I just think, and not only the people that use it, but also the people that don't care about people using it, and that translates in regards to society in general. There's a huge swath of people that you know, have that same public support for cannabis use, even if they're not using cannabis. And it's gonna be really interesting now with, you know, legalization. I saw it happen in Canada, so like I know a bunch of people that are older than myself that once cannabis was no longer considered a crime and a illegal drug, then they started looking at it. Oh, CBD. Oh, this. Oh, that. Like, again, just that stigma of it being illegal. Once that's waived, I think that's going to open up and should open up a lot of people to cannabis. And, you know, we even talked about it with psilocybin. But I think there's a lot of people that, you know, mentioned they used cannabis, you know, 20 years ago and they had a bad trip. Well, that bad trip was probably them not wanting to face whatever thing was in their ear and their mind that they put off. And that's the ego and the id kind of battling each other. And again, I think cannabis has that same psychedelic component to it in regards to, it'll make you think about things that you've been, you know, tucking away back in the, you know, back in the very back of your head for months, if not years.
Yep. No, it will. I think the world could use a little bit more of that from everybody, but who do I know? What do I know? But
no, I agree. That and a punch in the face. Like everyone needs a punch in the face to some degree, just so there's a lot of people out there that we see in the world that it just seems that no one's ever punched them in the face to kind of just slow their roll.
I'm glad you said it. No, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it a ton. Where can people find you, and what's the name of the app again? I want to make sure everybody stays tuned and tunes in when you kind of start announcing everything that's going to be happening for 420.
Yeah. The event is called Imagine BC. There's a light I got to move, kind of moving around. I have a studio in the works where all the content will be made.
Nice.
Ooh. And it's kind of like a between the two ferns look if you see. There's also, those are going to be cannabis plants sooner rather than later. It's just kind of mocked up. But you can see there's a green screen, and that kind of represents both the green market and the gray market that kind of still exists. So I have a table here. There was a table at some point, but it's been moved. The app itself, as I mentioned, is Imagine BC. And you can find me on @EliasTheodora, both in Instagram and Twitter. My Imagine BC app and all the content that's going to be coming out soon. So thank you so much for your time, man. I really enjoyed the chat, and I would love to do it again once the fight happens and I can start talking about what's next.
Yeah, dude, 100%. I'll certainly keep in touch and look forward to future conversations. Good luck with everything, and we'll be tuning in and making sure that we see what's happening.
It means the world. Talk soon. Thanks, brother.